Welcome to Your Business, Your Life with Matt DeFrancesco, your personal financial technician. Whether you've had years of success in your business or just starting out, Highlift Financial can help you create a vision for your business, life, and family, and align these for generational wealth. As they say, what happens in your life affects your business. And now, on to the show. Hello and welcome to Your Business, Your Life with me, Matt DeFrancesco. And as always, I'm joined today with my awesome producer, Eric Johnson. So Eric, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing awesome. I mean, you said it. I might as well just, I'll claim that. Awesome producer. I appreciate that, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We're finally, spring is here, at least in Western Pennsylvania. We finally are getting into the 60s every day. I actually did some yard work, which is... Yeah, I laugh. My friends are like, why don't you hire somebody to do that? I said, because I'm stuck in an office all the time. Mm-hmm. I said, I just want to get out and move a little bit.
Yeah. Being outside is nice. And I'll take some yard work for sure. It's raining a ton here right now, so I don't have to do any yard work yet because basically it would just be me messing with mud.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It'll dry up a little bit, but yeah. So it'll be nice to get out there. For today's topic, I know that we're going to be covering a few things, but on the last podcast, we talked about your rebrand, right? You're rebranding to Highlift Financial and how it better describes what you do for your clients. But you also mentioned that you're really gearing your market message toward the automotive repair industry. Why are you doing that, Matt?
Well, it's actually interesting. I kind of naturally fell into it. So, Eric, in my 15 years of working with family businesses, I've worked with a number of families that have either automotive collision or repair shops. And, all family businesses have faced these similar challenges mm-hmm. with trying to navigate their business and their life and how they all come together. Yet what I found is, especially in the automotive repair industry, there's three specific situations that they face that we can address for them. And I think, the way we address these things differentiate ourselves from other advisors, especially in this market in the automotive repair industry. So I kind of wanted to go through some of those steps to just talk about what the situations that they face and then how we help them to solve the problem.
Yeah, and I want to clarify one thing for those that are listening and those that have been with us for a while, because, I mean, you've been podcasting for quite some time, a ton of great information, a ton of great guests have come on the show. For those listening that are not in the automotive industry, this is not a complete shift to where this stuff won't pertain to you. It really does, because I know where Matt's heart is. He works with a lot of small businesses, but this focus, I know that you are beginning to specialize with these folks, but you're continuing to work with all small businesses because a lot of these things transcend just one industry. They transcend a lot. So you spoke exactly about those three things. So what are those three things?
Well, the first one is, and this is common to many family businesses, but it seems to be especially with, automotive repair mm-hmm. shop owners, is that what happens is they don't have a plan for whatever they think their next phase of life is going to be. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is, these guys, and almost to a person, they're grinders. They're out there building their businesses one job at a time, and they really only think about the next car that's coming through the shop. But what inevitably happens is they get to be about probably starting their late 40s and maybe into their early 60s, and at some point they come up from under the hood, and they go, hey, I have no clue on what my future holds. Like, what is it going to do? Am I going to retire? And if I do retire, what happens to the business? And, maybe in one case, they might be wondering, well, are my kids going to take over? Well, especially if they're working in the business, but they might be really good technicians, these kids, but do they have the business skills to run it? And, mm-hmm. And then the owner's thinking, well, then what does my role become? So all of a sudden, there's this fog that kind of comes over them. If the kids aren't interested in the business, then what do they do? Were they going to sell it? And then they have to ask the question, so, what's it worth? And what happens to my legacy? I mean, I put my blood, sweat, and tears into this thing for, 30, 40 years. What happens then? It was interesting. I had a guy I was talking to, owned a fairly nice collision shop. And, as we were talking, he was getting ready. He wanted to retire, and he was selling his business. And so I said to him, oh, okay, so what are you selling it for? He goes, I'm selling it for $1 million. And I said, okay. I said, where'd you come up with that number? And he just kind of looked at me and goes, I don't know. It just sounded like a good number.
Sounds like a great number. Yeah.
Exactly. And I know. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, what's your, you know, how much is your annual revenue? What do you have invested in this business? Do you own the, you know, what is the real estate worth? These are all things you've got to take into consideration. And he was just like pulling out of thin air because he had no clue.
All right, Matt. So that begs the question, how do you help them solve the problem?
Well, and that's a great question. And we do this with all our family businesses, but it seems to work particularly well in this automotive repair space. So the first step is really what I want to do is help that shop owner to define specifically what he wants his life and future to look like. And we'll, you know, I like to sit down with the husband and wife and then also then bring in the family and get their input into what their particular goals and dreams and how this all fits into the owner's vision. And one thing that we find is a lot of times we can identify where there may be a lack of communication between the family and then help them to help assist them in coordinating this vision. So what happens a lot of times is, you know, sometimes the owners, especially if the kids are working in the business, they're just naturally assuming, okay, the kids are going to take this over. But the kids really have no interest in it. I mean, I had one family, I remember, where the son was the mechanic, and he was a great mechanic. And he loved the technical end of it, had no interest in running the business at all. So all of a sudden, it's getting to be that time where we're starting to look at, you know, how are we going to transition this business? And, you know, you need somebody to be able to run the operational end. Mm-hmm. There was also a daughter in the family who had no interest in the mechanical end, but she loved the business aspect of it. So then what we were able to do is start to work together with them, all right, as a team. So the son could handle the technical aspect and the daughter could help the operational aspect. And so that's what we're in the process of doing now with dad helping them mentor them in all of those different areas.
Gotcha. That sounds great.
Yeah. And then what we do from there, once we've kind of got this vision, we'll then guide them in formulating a plan that's going to help them to accomplish the vision. And then we'll actually actively help them in executing the plan and also monitor as life changes. Because, you know, hey, life throws us wrenches all the time. And so we need to be able to be to adapt to these things that come up.
All right, Matt. So what is the second thing?
Well, the second, and again, as with most family businesses, these shop owners don't know where to get the answers that they need. Mm-hmm. So, you know, especially in the automotive repair industry, one thing that really impresses me about it is they've got great technical expertise. There are so many different organizations that provide them, you know, technical training, certifications, to really be able to handle that technical aspect of the business.
Yeah.
And there's some, especially in the collision repair industry, that have very good operational expertise, so about running their business. But what I'm finding is most of them, they have very little in business management skills and almost no help in coordinating their own business and lives and how they work through that. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, you know, life does throw them wrenches. It throws all of us wrenches.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, and so if you have you know, if you have a situation where, you know, a spouse dies, a child's going through a divorce, a grandchild sick, these are all things that affect the business owner. I recently last week I went to the funeral of one of my clients, his dad, who had passed away, and his dad had dementia. And so he had been in a home, he was in a home for about 2 years. What we were able to do is, because we have this team of experts in areas that are outside my area of expertise, that handle and help guide families in the whole elder care transition. Mm-hmm. We were able to help him to navigate that. So, but you know, during these latter weeks when his dad was sick and declining, it took him out of his business. Mm-hmm. And so these are just things that happen in life. So we can be that one point of contact for these owners because we have access to all these different experts in many different areas. So we have tax and legal experts. Like I said, the elder care specialist, college planning specialist. So if they have kids or grandkids that are looking to go to college, how do they navigate that whole system? Mm-hmm. We have counselors. So if the family's having emotional or psychological issues, or, you know, God forbid, drug and alcohol problems. Mm-hmm. We have specialists that can help them in those areas. We have access to benefit specialists to help them to be able to shop and find the best benefits programs, because that's really important, because we have to, first off, we have to have good plans for our employees, not only to keep them happy, but also for retention.
Absolutely.
And then we have HR specialists, you know, because HR is an interesting one, because in the what I found is in the automotive repair industry, there that's one area that they seem to be really lacking. And now they're starting to run into more and more issues. COVID has started to bring that to the forefront. You know, like I said, drug and alcohol problems, OSHA problems. So, they don't have a lot of times the expertise in the HR area. So we have access to experts in that can help to guide them. And then sales and marketing specialists. So for those that maybe have a retail side, whether they sell parts or aftermarket parts, those type of things. A lot of times one of the challenges I see is that they hire these people and they're like, they're not performing. And, you know, I'll kind of come in and all of a sudden you start talking to them and it's going, well, that's because they don't have any training. Well, I have access to experts that we can bring in to help train their sales and marketing staff. And the nice thing is, because I can speak the language, I always say I know enough to be dangerous in these areas, but I can be the point person and help them to coordinate the solutions. So I bring in the expert. I help to translate for the client what they want to accomplish, and it just makes their job a lot easier. And to give you an example, most of my clients have told me that they really like just having one person to call. I got this problem. I don't know where to go. Let me call Matt.
Yes.
And then I can get them directed.
Yeah. And so I want to take a step back, because the point that you were making is that they don't always know where to go to get the answers they need. And what concerns me for every business owner out there is that they're Googling, and they're going to jump on Google and they're going to think, okay, well, I need to find a way to sell my business, and what's the best way to do that? So I should probably talk to A, B, or C, whatever it is, right? They're going to find somebody who can facilitate maybe an ownership transfer or a buy-sell agreement or whatever, but they don't take into account all the things that you're talking about here, all the things that you listed. This is life, right? This is life. Some people have children that will excel taking over the business, and by all means, they are blessed in that fashion, and they know that they have a pretty good path to run on, but they still need the structure in place. They need to make sure that, you brought up sales and marketing specialists.
Right.
How much is it going to, how much is that business going to be worth if you can train salespeople or bring in a marketing consultant that helps you market yourself, and all of a sudden the value of your business goes up over the next 2 to 3 years to when you do sell it, whether it's internally to family or it's externally to another buyer, you get your top dollar, right? These are things that I don't think people think about or understand. The counselors that you spoke about, a lot of people that are selling businesses now or wanting to retire now, they're called the sandwich generation, right? You and I are in that.
Exactly.
And so now you've got parents that you're trying to take care of as well. And what does that look like? And what can you do to help facilitate their transition from a home to a assisted living or whatever? Business owners have so much on their plate. And when you bring in somebody who has a singular focus, I'm going to help you sell your business. And usually it's because they're going to make something from it. Let's be honest.
Right. Exactly.
That's a problem for me. And I'm just going to state that. I have a huge issue with that, because there's motivation there that is not geared toward the client, in my opinion, or the business owner, in my opinion. And this is where you're fundamentally different, in my opinion, because you have the ability, number one, as a fiduciary, to have the best interest of your client. And number two, you have this robust team behind you that you can introduce that business owner to all these different things that they should be considering. And you help walk them through that. It's not that they're doing this on their own. It's not like you're Google and you give them this information and say, go for it. You're walking alongside them in this process. So I think that's so incredibly beneficial. I had to state it for myself, my own. Again, this is my own personal opinion. This is your podcast, but I had to say that because I've seen it go wrong. I've seen it go bad. And it's devastating to a family. And I hate to see that, because somebody's worked decades for their business to be what it is, for it not to fulfill the needs that they need in the next stage of their life. I'm sorry.
You're exactly right, Eric. And like you said, I mean, they go to Google. You don't know what kind of information that you're getting out there, or they go to a trusted friend, or maybe a trusted advisor that either doesn't really know or doesn't have the breadth of a network to be able to get them to the right person. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that, and that's one thing that I'm very diligent about is I hold myself to a very, very high standard. Mm-hmm. It's just, I feel I owe that to my clients, my family, and myself. And so I go through, as I start to meet professionals in these different areas, I vet them.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to meet my standard.
Yep. Yep. And we've met some of those professionals as your guests. And that's exactly the beauty of it is that you're giving people information through this podcast where they can go and look up the guests that you brought on. Why does Matt work with this person? Why does Matt choose to do business with them or partner with them? You're not shy about it. And that's the beauty because they can do the research. They can do a little bit of background checking on these folks that you work with to know that they're good, high quality folks, that you're helping your business owners trust their process. So I love that. I didn't mean to derail it. I get a little bit passionate because I don't like to see people who've worked so hard and created something so beautiful all their life get screwed. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say that. They're just
You
know what I mean? Seriously.
I'm trying to maintain some decorum here. So.
Sorry, I didn't.
So I'll let you go off the rails.
Yeah, there you go. Let's bring this back on the rails. I'm sorry. So number three, what's the third thing that you're really seeing?
Well, the third thing is that I really find, and so I guess I'm going to get a little passionate now about this because I think this speaks to exactly what you were saying. So I think that, the automotive repair industry has really been underserved by the financial service industry. Mm-hmm. And so what do I mean by that? Now, a lot of these shop owners, especially those that have, decent sized businesses, they have good cash flow. They're making a lot of coin. They can bank some of it too, but the cost of running a shop can be astronomical. I mean, purchasing equipment. I mean, it's amazing how, some of the shop owners and how a new emissions regulation comes out from mm-hmm. the state or Absolutely. The federal government, and now they've got to buy a $20,000 piece of equipment. Otherwise, they can't do business. This stuff happens all the time. They have certifications that they're required to have and to maintain. There's training. Then, in a lot of these cases, there's employee turnover. And, then they also deal with issues, like we talked about, drug and alcohol abuse, divorces, these things that the employees are going through in mm-hmm. their lives. So as a result, they spend a lot of money reinvesting into their own business. So what happens is they don't have a tremendous amount of what we call investable assets, as we call it in the business. And we're on a podcast, so you can't see my air quotes. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by investable assets is those are assets like brokerage accounts, 401ks, retirement plans, insurance and annuity products, those type of things. That's what we consider investable assets. And most planning advisors, they get paid on the assets under management that they manage. Usually a percentage on that. So what happens is they tend to look for clients that have a large amount of these assets that they can manage. And your auto repair shop guys don't typically have a lot of that. A lot of cash a lot of times, but not the other assets. And because they haven't been educated, a lot of times they're sometimes hesitant. But there's always those guys, those commission-based advisors who can convince them to buy some type of commission-based product. Maybe it's a fixed indexed annuity. Hey, there's no downside on this. Or, insurance products and get them overloaded on insurance. Or, mutual funds that have high commissions. But there's no plan that goes around all of this. And so this leads them to be susceptible to these type of advisors and not always get the adequate solutions that they need. So, as I said before, one of the things, first off, as a registered investment advisory firm, we are a fiduciary. And what that means is that as a fiduciary, we are required to always put the client's best interest first in any recommendation that we make.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always got to be first and foremost. And we're required by law to always do that. So what we've done is we've instituted a service-based fee. So it's based off of the level of service that the client wants. Okay. And what that enables us to do is to be agnostic in any specific solutions that we recommend. Now, that being said, we do have access to a whole wide variety of the solutions that they may need. But because we're working on a service-based fee, that does not preclude you from using, you know, another advisor, a family member, somebody like that. Now, I'm going to – this is – I'm going to kind of add a little point to that. I do that with a few clients, not very many. Most of them, I like to have control of the assets, not because of because I earn any money on that, but it is much easier from a planning standpoint to be able to handle that aspect, which is what I do.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I prefer that, but I don't. That does not preclude you if you have your uncle is your financial advisor and or your best friend, and it's like, look, you know what, he's doing a nice job. I want to do that. That's fine. The only thing I would ask is that you allow me to have open conversations with them so we can make sure that your plan is coordinated.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So anyway, so those are the three things that I think really kind of set us apart. You know, in this space. And that's why I just from a marketing standpoint, we're looking to kind of create a national voice out there, because I think that we can provide a high amount of value to this industry as we've provided also to other family businesses that we've worked with. And like I said, just because we're using this as our kind of our marketing arm does not mean that we don't work with any other family business. As a matter of fact, we embrace all of those. It's just, again, it's more of a marketing tool that we're trying to to try to create this national voice out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate that. I think those three things that they're facing are incredibly important. Obviously, you've explained it beautifully what needs to happen and what your opinion is as far as what these folks need to be looking for. I've actually got a question for you if you're ready.
I'm ready.
All right. You've got your finger on the pulse, and you've talked to a lot of these specific business owners in the automotive industry.
Right.
What are you seeing as far as the changes that they're needing to make to their business right now due to the fact that, and just out of doing a little bit of digging, there are now 57 electric or at least electric hybrid vehicles on the U.S. market from 25 different manufacturers.
Right.
So those are huge changes that are happening in the automotive industry, and I know that there's certain regulations, like, I mean, you brought up the EPA stuff and the environmental things as far as exhaust.
Right.
But what are you seeing from your clients where they're having to make these shifts to be able to service vehicles that are a whole new category?
That's a great question, Eric, because so you've almost got to break it down into two different groups. The first one is your larger shops.
Mm-hmm.
They are much more adaptable. Okay, so they're seeing the trends in this, and they're starting to work toward that, and they're working with a lot of the industry leaders to do that. Now, because they recognize, I mean, I've got a college buddy of mine who works for Ford, who told me that Ford's already announced that by 2035, all their vehicles will be electric.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys are kind of on the forefront of that. And so they're starting to invest in technologies that will allow them to be able to work on those vehicles, into the training that's involved in that. COVID has been actually a bit of a problem with that because, again, a lot of this training has now had to go online where they can't really go to the conferences or the centers and get the hands-on. But I think as we start to come out of this, you'll start to see more and more of that. So that's kind of the first aspect. The larger shops are starting to adapt. It's a concern of theirs, but they know that just as life changes, they need to evolve too. It's the smaller shops, I think, that are really struggling because it's, again, they'll have to almost retool their whole shops to do that, which is an enormous investment. And my concern is that you're going to start to see, as you see in many businesses, there's going to start to be some compression in the automotive repair business where the little, mom and pop that has the garage, behind their house won't be able to compete anymore. And so that's another reason why those type of shops need to start doing some planning now. on are we going to adapt or how are we going to maneuver through this? Because otherwise they may just go by the wayside. And then there's almost, you know, then the succession plan is just shutting the doors and then trying to figure out what you're going to do from there. We don't want that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's really where things are going. And it's like anything else in the world. We need to evolve. That's one of the things, especially in working with the families. And as I'm talking to the next generation, especially if they're coming into the business, I really work with them on trying to establish an entrepreneurial mindset that we need to learn. This is not the old days of just cranking cars through. We have to be able to adapt because technologies are changing. You know, some of these guys, you know, their grandfathers, you know, taught them how to work on cars when you had a carburetor. And then all of a sudden, fuel injection comes in. And then all of a sudden, now everything's run by computer. And it's a completely different game now. The same thing is going to happen with electric cars.
Yeah, and I think that, in my mind, first of all, the shops that are going to be working on electric vehicles and having to make those major purchases, they have to pass that cost on, right? So I believe, in my opinion, I could be wrong. I'd love to be proven wrong. But I believe that any large shop that's going to be having to purchase all that equipment, their rates overall are going to have to go up just because of the fact that it's not as though the electric vehicles are going to be flooding in. They're paying for all the electric vehicle diagnostic machines and things that they're adding. Right. Even those that have gas-powered engines, they're going to see an uptick in the prices unless there are certain shops out there that don't make that transition. Even if Ford does make all electric vehicles by 2035, it doesn't mean the gas-powered vehicles are going to be gone. Exactly. They're going to need to be serviced. And I think that a lot of those mom-and-pop shops can survive as long as they're, you know, focusing and then doing their marketing plan, which, again, you help people with. You point them in the right direction. They market to the folks that still have the gas engines. I know that, you know, my wife and I have talked about an electric vehicle. We'd like to get a Tesla at some point. I'm not plugging Tesla, but that's just one we've researched, right?
Right.
But that's going to be a few years off for us, and I'll still have gas-powered vehicles. I mean, I'm just going to for a while. But then that's, and you know, maybe someday I'll make the full switch, but we'll see. You know, the things that need to change in that industry a little bit for me to be able to make that decision. But there's a lot of us out there that'll still have those gas-powered vehicles that those smaller shops can still, you know, focus on. So I think that they'll be around for a while.
I understand what you're saying, but, you know, again, the thing we've got to be careful of, and if you see kind of where the political climate is moving, in a lot of ways, it may almost be mandated. And so it may accelerate that process, too. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that we have to plan for. I you know, my feeling is, and again, I'm going to try not to get political on this. You know, as we move into, and I'm all for green energy and clean sources, but we can't just like cut off, you know, fossil fuels and all of a sudden jump into electric and solar and all those type of things. You have to transition it. Otherwise, it just the whole economy would just get backlogged.
Correct.
And so, you know, again, hopefully that we can slowly transition, and what you say is what comes to fruition. But you know what what I try to prepare my clients for is if the government would mandate this is what it is, this is the cutoff, and you know how do we adapt to that?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Matt, great podcast today, great information. Any closing thoughts?
Well, you know, as always, you know, I want to tell the audience, if you find any value in this, please share this podcast with anybody that you know that would get value of it, especially if you know anybody in the automotive repair industry, collision shops, repair shops, those type of things. And, you know, always continue to keep us in mind for anyone you think can use our help. And, you know, you can always find us at our website. It's highliftfinancial.com for scheduling. If you want to schedule a brief introductory call, just say, hey, you know, Matt, here's my situation. What do you think? I do that. There's no cost, no obligation. More than happy to give you a half hour of my time to do that. And you can still also find us on the dfranvfo.com website too, and access the same scheduling software.
Fantastic.
No problem. No problem. So, Eric, thank you so much. I appreciate your help and guidance as we kind of navigate through this whole world of rebranding and podcasting and all that stuff. So, and I also want to say thank you to the listening audience. You know, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to Your Business, Your Life with me, Matt DeFrancesco. If you've not yet subscribed to the podcast, please click on the subscribe now button below. This way, when I come out with a new podcast, it will show up directly on your listening device. This makes it easier for you to share these podcasts with your friends and family. So again, thanks so much for listening. So for me and everyone at High Lift Financial, make it your best day every day. And I'll see you again next time. So take care and God bless. Hey, I really want to thank you for listening to the Your Business, Your Life podcast. If you want to be notified when new episodes become available, click the subscribe button below.
The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of High Lift Financial. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investment, legal, or tax advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified professional with any questions you may have regarding your business or personal planning. DeFrancesco Financial Concierge, LLC, DBA High Lift Financial, is a registered investment advisor. Registration with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission or any state security authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Concierge services discussed in this podcast do not represent the entirety of services provided by High Lift Financial. For a full listing of services, please visit www.highliftfinancial.com.